Parshat Ki Tetzeh is one of the three parashot in the Torah that is just unbelievably chock full of mitzvot. Mishpatim, Kedoshim, and Ki Tetzeh. And it is a purely halachic parasha. There are no stories in it. All right, it's one mitzvah after the other. The mitzvot seem to be geared, at least from the beginning and end, to the imminent entry into the land. And so it starts with Ki Tetzeh L'Machom Alevecha, and starts the Yifat Tohar, which is a scenario that can only happen once we're in the land. It ends with Amalek, which is premised on Vayaba Niach Adonai Levecha Lacha Mikol Levecha, that will be settled and having defeated our enemies, Amalek. And there are numerous mentions in the middle of the parsha of things that are clearly related to the land, to agriculture, etc. However, there is also a huge block. We looked at this 3 years ago in, from a different perspective. There is a huge block of laws having to do with forbidden relations. Forbidden relations is not really what it's about. What it's really about is what we call psulei kahal, people who are not allowed to marry in. And the notion here is people who are Jewish, but who are not allowed to marry in a regular marriage. The classic example you could think of course, is a mamzer. A mamzer, the law of mamzer is here and only here. But in addition, there are several other laws, including the Ammoni Moavi and the Mitzrian Edomi. Mitzrian Edomi, for two generations, are banned, meaning a Mitzri, a real Mitzri, converts, joins the people. The third generation of that family can marry in. How do you get three generations if you can't marry in? There's other people who are on the periphery of the community that you can marry. That's how that would happen. None of this is all moot, because all these nations are long, long gone. We don't know who they are. Everybody's a mutt in the Middle East, so we don't know who anybody is. But that's the theoretical halakha. That's the way it's presented in the Torah. Ammoni Moavi, famously, can never marry in, meaning a person converts who's an Ammoni, he has to marry another convert, etc. And then if he has daughters, they can marry in, but the men cannot marry in. The famous story with Ruth. And prefacing that, there is this one pasuk that seems to be very much out of place. So what I did is in source one, I replicated the pasuk. In source two, I gave the entire context. We're not going to read through the whole context, but just to show you how out of place it is. Lo yikach ish et eshet aviv, which means a man may not take his father's wife. Now, his father's wife isn't necessarily his mom. All right? Velo yigaleh knaf aviv. And he shall not uncover the kanaf. What is kanaf? Seemingly corner of a garment. What does that have to do with anything here? We'll see. Of his father. Seems to be a prohibition against what we're going to call patrogyny, which is having relations with the wife of your father. Patrogynos. Right? Yes, I did just make it up. Now, the context of it, though, is strange. Because where should this mitzvah appear? And by the way, where does it appear? With different wording. In Vayikra. We're in Vayikra. In what context? In the list of the Arayot, right, at the end of Acharimot. And so if you take a look at passage 3, you'll see it explicitly. Ervat avicha, veratimcha lo tegalein. If you remember the Shira Noach, said, what is ervat avicha? Doesn't mean homosexuality with your father. It means the one that your father is intimate with, you having relations with her, which is ervatimcha. Imcha hi lo tegalei ervata. So that's your mother. Ervat eshet avicha lo tegalei. So that covers, sorry for the pun, your father's wife, meaning who's not your mother, right? Ervat avicha hi, because she is the erva of your father. So a prohibition of patrogyny, if you say enough times it'll become a real word, a prohibition against patrogyny here is explicit. And it's right in the context of all the other arayot. And then, of course, the list in Achrimot, which is the prohibitions, is followed in the end of Kedoshim, second half of Kedoshim, with the consequences. Meaning if somebody has these relations, then karet, execution, etc., one or another kind of the consequences that are listed there. And that's passage 4. Misha sheishkav et eshet aviv ervat aviv gila motum tushneihem dmeihem bam. And that seems to be sreifa, whatever how do you call it, skila, the one of the mitah that's there. Okay. So you got to wonder, why is this one listed in Ki Tetzeh? And important to note, nothing else is listed in Ki Tetzeh. No other erva is listed in Ki Tetzeh. As a matter of fact, what is the rest of the list listed? So now let's take a look at passage 2 and see the context. Okay? Now, we could do all of Ki Tetzé, but you know, I wanted to start with something with the contextual area, which has a whole list of halachot having to do with improper sexual relations, but not forbidden relations. Meaning, for what are forbidden relations? Forbidden relations usually are what we call consanguinity. That's a real word. Consanguinity, which is when there is some blood relation between the two people, that means that under all circumstances, relations are forbidden. Brother and sister, mother and son, right? Aunt and nephew. Right? There's nothing that'll change in their life that's going to make that different. The only exception to that, of course, is a married woman. A married woman gets divorced, she can now have relations with this other guy. Right? So now, here, on the other hand, the halachot are not about consanguinity, but rather about relational limitations. Right? So, ki yen na ravetulam o rasa li'ish, mutsa ish ba'ir v'shachav imah. There's a betrothed maiden, and a man lays with her. So she gets skila, and he gets skila. Right. And then, famously, this is the rape case. So if it turns out it was in the city, then the assumption, and of course there's much more to it in practical halacha, the assumption is that she was consenting, because otherwise she would have screamed. In the field, the assumption is she screamed and nobody heard her, and therefore she is off the hook, and he is guilty. Okay, pasuk chavchet. Ki imtza ish na'ara, and this is going to be key for our parshanut. Ki imtza ish na'ara betula shelo orasa. A man finds a na'ara betula who is not yet betrothed, which means there's no violation of relationship in these relations. Utfasa v'shachav ima, which means he raped her. V'nimtza. Natani shachav ima la via na'ara chamishim kasa v'lo tia lisha, lo tachal asher ina lo echal shachal kol yamav. And he has to pay what's essentially a ketubah payment. And he can never divorce her. And this is all premised, of course, based on Shmod, on the fact that she and her father are both agreeable to this marriage, which it sounds crazy to us, but there's good reasons sociologically in their society why that would be the preferred avenue to take. Lo chashuv. None of these are relationships which are inherently problematic. They're problematic because of prior acts. In other words, she already got betrothed to somebody. Or this guy took her without the consent of the girl, without the consent of the father. So it's not as if these two people are banned from each other inherently, but there's other things in the way. And then, lo yikach ish deish taviv, lo yigalak kanaf aviv. Boom. And I made it big because that's what our topic is. And then what you see is, lo yavo ptsua daka chut shofcha bikala adonai. This is somebody who has had, shall we say, an involuntary vasectomy or something of the sort. Cannot marry into a regular marriage. Lo yavo mamzer, lo yavo amoni muavi, right? And then lo ta'ev edomi. So you see that smack in the middle of all of these relational things, the first half of which are forbidden acts and their consequences, and the second one is kind of national status or personal status due to stuff that's out of your control. This guy was in a bad accident, or this guy's parents weren't married to each other at the time. She was married to somebody else at the time. So he's a mamzer. Or, what can I do? My father's an amoni, or my mother's, so that's who I am. And therefore, I'm banned from certain kind of marriages. And smack in the middle, you have this classic erevah. It's very strange. It's, by the way, not the only time that this particular forbidden relationship pops up out of context. When I say out of context, I mean not in Vayikra. Bnei Yisrael are commanded, and we talked about this a whole different context a couple of years ago. Bnei Yisrael are commanded that when they enter the land, they are first to go immediately to Har Gerizim and Har Eival. Right? And to have the ceremony of the Kala and the Bracha, six Shvatim on Har Eival, six Shvatim on Har Gerizim, and the Bracha, the Kala and Har Eival, the Bracha and Har Gerizim, and there are 11 curses that they're to imprecate. And everybody's supposed to answer Amen. The Levim look towards Har Eval and says, Arur ha'ish asher, da-da-da-da-da, and everybody says, Amen. Then, according to Torah Shebaal Peh, they then look at Har Gerizim and say, Baruch ha'ish asher lo yaseh. Right, same thing. Same 11 things. Those 11 things involve Avodah Zarah, involve miscarriage of justice, involve taking bribes to throw a case, do involve one or other of the arayot, but notably, passage 5, Arur Shochevim Eshet Aviv. So I'm going to ask you, what is the big deal about Eshet Aviv? And no, it's not Imo, it's Eshet Aviv, that keeps getting highlighted. It makes it into the Arayot where it belongs. It makes it onto Har Eival as one of, I think, only two that of Arayot that are mentioned, including Shochevim Be'emah. And then it makes it in the middle of Kitetse in a whole different context. Right? And I knew Jason would be here, so at the bottom of the page, I really, really had to play with space to get this in there. Right? But I put it in. And you'll notice that I'm not the first one to ask the question, what's it doing here? Everybody asks the question. It starts in the Sifri. You take a look in passage 6, the Midrash Halacha asks the question. Mikan Amru, meaning it asks the question, but it starts by telling us the answer. Nosim al ha'anusa ve'al ha'mefuta, which means, if a person has had, we'll just call it, non-marital sex. Nobody's married, these two people aren't married, and they have sex with each other. And let's say it was your brother. Your brother had sex with a girl, one night stand, finished, you can marry the girl. That's not a violation of Eshet Achiv. Okay? However, let's say your brother married a girl and then divorced her, and then you had non-marital sex with her, then you're chayav. In other words, the non-marital sex does not create a relationship, but the non-marital sex violates a relationship. That's the rule. Nosei adam anusat aviv mefutat aviv, which means, if, now this is gross, but this whole context is, if father had a one-night stand, the son could marry the girl. Because a one-night stand, we're calling it a one-night stand, but non-marital sex does not establish a relationship. Right? Anusat p'no mefutat p'no. Or if a, this is weirder, but look at Amos Bet, if a man's son had a one-night stand, the father could marry the girl. Rabbi Yehuda oser b'anusat aviv mefutat aviv. Rabbi Yehuda disagrees in one case. If father had a one-night stand with a girl, the son can't marry her. Not the inverse, and not anybody else. So if brother had a one-night stand, the brother could marry her, etc. But not father. V'chach nemar lo yikach ish et eshet aviv. So what did Rabbi Yehuda do with our pasuk? Rabbi Yehuda said, lo yikach ish et eshet aviv actually means a man may not take
anyone
who father had relations with.
But how does
Eshet become that? Thank you, Jason. How does Eshet become that? Thank you. We're going to exactly hock on that issue. The critical point of this entire pasuk is the Vav. Lo yikach Eshet Eshet Aviv, ve'lo yigal ha'knaf aviv. How do you interpret that Vav? So what does Vav mean? What does Vav mean? What does a Vav mean in before Hebrew word? It has a lot of different meanings. Right? So besides Vav ha'ipuch, which is a grammatical form where it turns the future into the past. Vav is a conjunct, and Bereshit bara Elohim et hashamayim ve'et haaretz. You have Vav ha'nigud, in which the Vav actually serves as an appositional, like Vatishak Orpa l'chamota ve'rut davkaba. Orpa kissed her mother-in-law goodbye, and Ruth stuck with her, meaning but Ruth stuck with her. You also have a relatively infrequent, but still frequent enough to note, type of Vav, which is called Vav HaBi'ur, where the Vav introduces an explanation of the previous line. Right? And so you could interpret Lo yikach eshet aviv, which means Lo yigal ha'knaf aviv. So what's eshet aviv? How it's defined? How is it defined? Knaf aviv, anyone who father was intimate with. Which means then we're stretching the meaning of eshet only here. To say it doesn't just mean somebody who had the chuppah, but any kind of relations. Now, that's how Rabbi Yehuda might read it. We'll see more about Rabbi Yehuda in a minute. And we take a look, and there's a smattering of the Rishonim here. But you're going to see how everybody's bothered by the existence of this pasuk here, including Rabbi Yehuda, and says there must be something else cooking here. So Rabbi Yehuda says, patrogeny is an exception. Now, I'm going to get there. Is an exception to the rule that non-marital sex establishes a relationship. In the case of father having relations with a girl, it does create a relationship that then bans that girl on the son forever. Even if that original thing was a one-night stand, right? Okay, take a look at Rashi. Rashi says the following. We're going to see where he gets it from. Shomeret Yavam Shel Aviv Haruya Laviv. Who's this Yigal HaKanaf Aviv? So here's the scenario. Shimon dies. Shimon had a wife, Dina. Dina now, Shimon had no kids. So what happens to Dina? Dina falls, is the language, to Reuven, to do Yibum. Reuven's son, Chetzron, has relations with Dina. Now, where's the prohibition? So Dina has a potential relationship with Reuven. And that's what Reuven's son violated. But Reuven and Dina were never intimate. We were waiting around to see what's Reuven going to do. Is he going to marry her, give a chalitza? In the meantime...
Is it similar to betrothal, though, while you're unsure?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's a sugi and daf yudzayin and yavamot. Yesh zika or in zika. Right.
Intimacy when you're betrothed to someone. Good.
So are we going to call zika of yibum intimacy, betrothal? That's a good question. That might be what's cooking here. That's what Rashi says. Hare kvar huzar aleh. Mishum ervata chiyavicha. Wait a second. Chetzron's already not allowed to have relations with Dina. Why? Because who's Dina? His uncle's wife. The fact that uncle's dead doesn't make a difference. Right? So what does he say? So now the Torah did it in order to create two lotases in the hugely unlikely event that Shimon dies without kids, Dina falls to Reuven, and Reuven's twiddling his thumbs, and Reuven's son jumps into bed with her. In that weird, highly unlikely event, two lavim. Right? Now, v'lismoch la'aloy avam amzer, there's another reason, because what's the next pasuk? It's not exactly the next pasuk. Pasuk gimel. This is pasuk aleph. What's pasuk gimel? Lo'y avam amzer. What's a mamzer? Don't start talking about your neighbor on the fence. Right? What's a mamzer? The answer is we don't know. We know it's somebody who's off, but we don't know what. So it says, why did the Torah write this here? La'med she'en mamzer el mechave kretot. To tell me that a mamzer is only the result of a relationship that would lead to karet or worse. So a kohen marries a grusha, the kid's not a mamzer. It's a halal, not a mamzer. Right? You marry an amoni, marries a Jewish girl, the kid's not a mamzer. It's an amoni. Right? Okay, good. So Rashi here is saying exactly the question. To quote Dr. Bonchek's series, which he got from Nechama, of course. What's bothering Rashi? Mama Friela Rashi. What's bothering Rashi is God was bothering us. What is this erva doing in the middle of Kitetze? He says, first of all, it's there to introduce this whole new Shemret Yavam thing, but it's also there to help us define what a mamzer is, because what really needs to be in Kitetze? Mamzer, because Kitetze is listing psule kahal, people who can't marry in regular marriage. So why did the Torah stick this lotase in? To help us define an example or model of what creates a mamzer. Okay. Ibn Ezra takes it in a very different direction. What does Ibn Ezra say? Kavshet Aviv ha'anusa. He picks out Rabbi Yehuda. He says, what is it that a boy is not allowed to do? Have relations with his father's girlfriend. No marriage, no nothing. They had relations once. Right? What's bothering Ibn Ezra? What's it doing here? So he has a different answer to what it's doing here. It's here to expand only patrogeny to father's girlfriend.
You mean expand what Eshet means?
What Eshet means only for this one. Only for Eshet Aviv.
Based on what?
Because he's picking up on Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda reads the Vav differently. Lo yikach Eshet Aviv. Eshet Eshet Aviv, v'lo yigal HaKanaf Aviv, what's the Vav? The Vav Aviur, meaning, how are we defining Eshet Aviv here? Anybody whose father was Migalek Kanaf. Right?
What's the basis for doing that here and not doing it other
places? Good, so it might be exactly the problem of what's it doing here at all, if not to expand it. All right? But we still got to figure out what's going on exactly. No, Jason, your question is good, and that's what I want to get to, is not only what's it doing here, but why this huge push about this particular Isur, where's it all coming from? All right, so you can see that the Rashbam basically picks up on the second thing that Rashi said. All right, the Chizkuni says something interesting. It says, Lo Mayri Hacha B'Isur Eshet Av. It's not talking about Eshet Av. V'lo Balam Denu Sheish Mamzer Mechavi Kretud. He disagrees with Rashi left and right. So it's not there to teach you what a Mamzer is. Reshit Avu Adin Sharayot Shben Karet Ela Kamaita Parshat Arayot Shben Karet a Sefer Vayikra Nakat. He said all it did was to pick the first of the Arayot in Vayikra, because in Vayikra this one is the first on the list. Then he goes to the Ibn Ezra. He says, well, what's this talking about? It's talking about somebody who the father had a one-time relation with. Alright? And then he explains, Jason, now he alone, among the Mefarshim that we have on the page, actually explains what the word kanaf means. Kanaf is the corner of a garment. Where do we get that from? By the way, there's a minhag in many communities. I did this at my wedding. That when the chatan, after he gives kiddushin, he wears a talit, takes a talit and wraps it around and includes his kala and together under one talit. It's a beautiful minhag. Where does that come from? That comes from Ruth's words to Boaz in the middle of the night. What does Ruth say to Boaz? Ufarastak nafcha al amatecha. Take your garment and cover me with it, which is a way of saying marry me. And so kanaf then becomes intimacy, like being under the same blanket, as it were. So if it's somebody who father had that kanaf with, then the son's banned from it, which means this now becomes the exception. Okay, now that's the psukim, the pasuk, the context. That's the way that the Sifri, two different opinions, the Rishonim, are all battling over what this thing is doing in such a weird place. But now I want to look at it from a different angle, which is from the halachic angle, which, by the way, is where the Sifri went. The Mishnah at the beginning of the 11th parak of Yevamot says, Nosim al anusav al mfuta unes matal anusachaya. We already said that. That if somebody had one-time relations with somebody, that doesn't ban that girl on his kin. But if somebody was married to somebody and then got divorced, then having one-time relations is a violation. Okay. No, Rabbi Yehuda Oser Van Osat Avin Osfot Aviv. We already saw Rabbi Yehuda, who says that if your father had a one-time relation with somebody, then she's banned to you. And they disagree. And the Gemara here simply goes to what we've already seen about what kanaf is.
You're just saying that period of connection lasts, even though the connection doesn't last. So it could be specifically that you would think that a child from the result of that relationship that you just described could be a mamzer, because maybe the relationship itself does carry over.
Okay, very good. So maybe there's something particularly sticky about the issue of, well, who is this? My brother, my father, my son, right? All that kind of stuff. Right, the famous weird Gemara with Ayah and what?
In a sense, in terms of the
right, answer. Right. So just parenthetically, and so that really is a parenthesis. If you turn the page, you see in the Psikta, this Isur gets brought into a case which I'm going to use to dovetail to move us towards what I think is a different angle on this that might help resolve what's going on. Reuven was deprived of the Bechorah. Why did Reuven lose the Bechorah? Because of the Bilhah story, right? And that's clear and explicit, both in Bereishit. It's not so explicit because Yaakov is talking poetry, but it's very explicit in Divrei Hayamim Aleph Perek Hei Pasuk Aleph. Uvachalo Yitzuei Aviv Nitna Bechorato Livnei Yosef. Right, good. Take a look at the Psikta does with this. Psikta Zutrat does like 8th or 9th century Midrash. Which if you read it simply, it would mean that Reuven slept with Bilhah, which would be a very big problem. Now, parenthetically, we're all familiar with the Midrash on it, right? What is the Midrash's take on what he did? He shifted the beds around. So you would think, reading the Psukim, that, oh yeah, it's some obscure Midrash that became popular because third grade teachers didn't want to tell their kids something. So, Yair Zakovich and Avigdor Shinan, both great professors at Hebrew U, did a whole series of booklets, I think back in the 90s, I think, or the 80s, on different topics, typically in Bereishit, but also in Nevi'im, with like the whole history of Midrashic take on it. And one of them is exactly on Chet Reuven. And it seems that nearly every Midrashic take on it is that he moved the beds. Meaning, it's not as if the mainstream is you really had relations and there's some offside midrash. It's that there's actually only one or two midrashim you can find obscure that actually said he had relations with it. It seems to be really the mainstream approach. Right? We're going to get back to why that's significant. But watch how it plays out. Amru Razal, Nuka oto atzadik mi oto avon. Ruvain never did that. How do we know? Efshar atidin banav. You know the old story. How do you know you have to wear yarmulke in the Torah? Vayitzi Yaakov mir Sheva. Well, you think Yaakov's going to walk out without a yarmulke? I know that sounds funny, but well, that's what they say. Efshar oto atidin banav lamor al har eval v'lomar arur shochev meish taviv ki gilak naf aviv. Reuven, remember, is going. His tribe is going to be on Har Eval, the cursers. They're going to be up on their own, cursing anybody who slept with his father's wife. And Reuven himself is guilty of it. Now, what they're saying really is very powerful. How could you, as the proud members of Shevet Reuven, stand up there when the thing that your father is most famous for is sleeping with his father's wife and say, cursed is anybody who sleeps with his father's wife?
But was it an Israel?
Now, you could turn it the other way and say it's an act of tshuva, right? Contrition, maybe. What?
They didn't really have the Torah. I mean, some people say, well...
Agreed. But you would say that it would be like Shevet Reuven. We would expect them to kind of, like, hunker down at that curse and not say anything.
Then maybe. Maybe.
And maybe they did. This is, again, I'm not arguing in favor or against. I'm just trying to point out how Chazal picked this thing up as being this very grievous thing, and there's no way in the world that Reuven really did that. It's so grievous.
Chazal's not concerned with the hypocrisy of that decision with Yaakov and Rachel and Leah.
Which hypocrisy? I mean,
not marrying a sister during
other's
life.
Oh, yeah. So, indeed, the Ramban's approach, remember the Ramban's approach is, because you think about Achot Ishto is not inherently as much of, like, say, much of natural law as you would say that this is, right?
Yeah,
and so you could argue that before Matan Torah, Achot Ishto is not a big deal, man marrying two sisters. And that's the famous Ramban that says the Torah was noheg, b'mei avot, only in Eretz Yisrael. Which is why Rachel had to die sort of on the border. It's not exactly on the border. It's a bit of a stretch. It's a big stretch. But that's part of the idea. But I want to... So Ella, the rest of it, and I only cut it out. It's not censorship. I only cut it out because I really didn't have room. As you can see, it's jam-packed. But an interesting sidelight of this entire thing is that the focal point of this Isur is expanding the prohibition of sleeping with father's consort, not just father's wife. So you start with sleeping with your own mom, yuck. Then sleeping with somebody your father was married to and is currently married to, which means it's adultery besides everything else. Okay, sleeping with somebody your father's married to and got divorced. Well, your father's still alive. Okay, sleeping with your father's widow. Okay, but she was married to him. And now we expand it to sleeping with somebody who at one point your father was intimate with, which we say does not apply anywhere else, and only according to Rabbi Yehuda applies here. But everybody agrees that this Isur seems to carry more power than any other, or is more impactful or something, because it shows up here, it shows up on Har Gerizim and Har Eval, and maybe it's because of a different kind of prevalence that exists. And I want to look kind of with a telescope and then periscope, if you will, in on a series of events that took place in Beit David. David is our hero. When you say teacher, you say Moshe. When you say Kohen, you say Aaron. When you say Melech, you say David. That's it. David HaMelech. And David is our hero, no question. And yet, Beit David almost was destroyed. Beit David almost was destroyed. What almost destroyed Beit David? So we know how it started, but watch some interesting things that develop along the way. I put Pasuk 14, the passage 14 there as kind of a highlight. Here, Mordechai, you want as kind of a highlight so you could see. David originally marries Michal. And then Shaul takes her away and marries off to Palti. Very, very weird thing. And then David is out doing his running away thing, and he ends up marrying a girl named Achinoam HaYisraelit, which coincidentally or not is the same name as Shaul's wife. And the second woman he marries is a woman named Avigail. Who's Avigail? Avigail is the widow of Nabal, that terrible, disgusting guy that God killed rather than let David kill him. Remember the story? What is Abigail called throughout the entire Sefer Shmuel? She's never called Abigail Eshet David. What's she called? Abigail Eshet Naval. Even though Naval's long dead. Eshet Naval. Now, why is that? So I want to move you ahead. We know how this story begins. David, for the first time that we read about, does not go out to war with the troops, sends the troops out, and he's hanging out in Yerushalayim. And they're going to war against Ammon because of the whole event that happened when he sent Shluchim to come console Hanun, right? And he's standing up there, and he looks down, and with Leonard Cohen playing in the background, he sees Bathsheba bathing, right? By the way, Leonard, I think, got that line from the Gemara in Sanhedrin, which is, your faith was strong when you needed proof, is exactly the sugya in Sanhedrin. Okay? What does he find out about this girl? Who is she? Bathsheba Bat Eliam, which, by the way, is going to be important because Eliam happens to be one of his generals, one of his colonels. And she's Eshet Uriah, who's another one of his colonels. Right? And what does he do without batting an eyelash? What does he do? In other words, not only doesn't stop him, but I'm going to suggest even further that this actually may be part of the motivation. And he has her brought to him, or sleeps with her. She goes back, and then famously she sends a message to him that she's pregnant, and everything else flows from there. And parenthetically, I'm just going to look at story 16. Uriah is one of his colonels. That's from the end of Perek of Gimel. And then when Natan comes to David and tells him the whole Mashal Kif Satarash, there were two men, and one had all these sheep, and one had one little poor Shepsela that slept with him, et cetera, right? And David goes crazy and said the guy should be killed and be four times paid, and everything else. Look at the big print. Now, by the way, this is all about Ataish. You're the man in this. And David says, Chatati. And then he reads the riot act. I am going to create evil that's going to come from your own house. What's that? Avshalom. I'm going to take your wives from you in front of you. I'm going to give to your fellow. They're going to sleep with your wives publicly. You did it discreetly, and you thought, by the way, you get away with it. I'm going to do it publicly in front of everybody, in front of the sun. Everybody's going to see this. Really dastardly. So what happens? We actually read afterwards. That's what happens. But first, there's all sorts of other stuff that happens in Beit David for this to come to fulfillment. What happens after the story of Bathsheba? The very next story that happens is Amnon, the crown prince, suddenly gets the hots for whom?
Tamar.
Now, as we can see in the story, Tamar is somebody who, theoretically, he should be allowed to marry. Because what does she say to him when he's about to grab her?
Ask
the king, he won't keep me from you. But instead, Amnon grabs her and rapes her and then sends her out. And that leads to doing what? Avshalom plotting for 2 years, not saying a word for 2 years, and then finally killing Amnon. What happens afterwards to Avshalom? He runs away. What happens as a result of that? Avshalom then starts his rebellion. Now, what happens at the end of at the beginning of Avshalom's rebellion? Take a look in source 19. Achitofel advises Avshalom to do the following: when David left Yerushalayim, he left 10 concubines there. Why did he leave 10 concubines? So he's saying, as long as I have women that I've slept with that Avshalom doesn't touch, because he would never do that, I'm still king. What does Achitofel advise Avshalom to do? Sleep with all 10 of them. And he publicly does it, meaning everybody sees him go into the tent. Right? By Yatua to Oel. Alright, Vatul Avshalom Oel Agag, by Avshalom Pelakshe Aviva and Ekol Yisrael. And now it's clear. This is a real rebellion. It's not over. David is old and cold. We'll just do this Baal Peh. David is old and cold, beginning of Sefer Malachim. Right? It can't get warm. So what do? They find whom? Avishag Hashunamit. Biggest knockout, most beautiful girl around. They bring Avishag, right? And Avishag stays with David, and it's fairly clear David never is intimate with her at all. And David dies. While David is dying, who tries to make himself king? Adoniyahu. Natan and Batsheva conspired together to get David to announce that we're going to crown Shlomo now. They crown Shlomo now. Shlomo becomes king. Adoniyahu comes to Batsheva, who's now the queen mother, and says, I have a request of you. What's the request? One request, please come to Shlomo and ask him, all right, I was supposed to be king, but God didn't want it, okay, but can I at least marry Abishag? Shlomo, who really starts out very tough. I mean, he take a look at the bottom of the page. Vayishava ha-melech Shlomo ba-Adonai demor ko yaseh lehim ko yosef. That's an oath. Ki v'nafsho diber Adoniyahu to davar hazeh. When Adoniyahu was saying this, he was saying with full intent. Because what did he say earlier? He said, you know what Adoniyahu really wants? He wants to be king. That's why he wants to take Abishag. Now notice how there's a whole cycle of events that happens here with, if you will, power sex. It starts off with David taking whom? The daughter of one of his colonels, who's the wife of another one of his colonels. What happens as a result? David has opened the door and can't say anything when Amnon does what? Takes a princess in the castle who theoretically he could marry, but he wants to have her this way. It's power. And throwing her out is power. Avshalom kills her, then what does Avshalom do? To show his power, he takes David's concubines. These are all part of the punishment to David for Batsheva. And then towards the end of his life, what happens? Adoniyahu tries to become king, tries to seize power, and ultimately tries to seize power how? By taking Abishag. By the way, Abishag is somebody David wasn't married to. David wasn't even intimate with. But she had the special position of being Sochenet HaMelech, the king's consort, without sex. This is something, by the way, that goes back, I've suggested, all the way back to, it's not my suggestion, to Cham. To Cham and Eshet Noach. Certainly goes back to Reuven and Bilhah. It's something that we see consistently throughout history, is that it's one thing when sex is an expression of lust. It's one thing when sex is an expression of love. It's great when it's in the proper setting. It's one thing with an expression of lust and when it's used wrongly to fulfill an appetite. But this particular series of events is sex being used as power, which I'm going to suggest the Torah finds far more heinous because it's calculating and it's using people towards an end as opposed to have an appetite and I can't overcome my passions. The Torah prohibits arayot for several reasons. We don't really know all the reasons. There's all sorts of relationships that the Torah has prohibited because unhealthy, psychologically unhealthy, because gzerat hakatuv, we're not sure why. And there might be multiple reasons. I'm submitting that the reason that the Torah prohibited, among others, ervat eshet avicha, not imcha, but eshet avicha, and allows possibly, like Rabbi Yehuda says, to expand it even to somebody your father was never married to, but just was intimate with once, is because really that's not about sex, it's not about love, it's not about lust, it's about power. And it's about using another person and using that vehicle to gain that power. And that's why it suddenly makes its entrance on Har Gerizim and Har Eival, where they are cursing people who misuse their power, such as taking bribes as judges. And it shows up here in Kitetze where it establishes those who are in and those who are out of the community. It may be, like some of the Rishonim say, a hint to the rest of the Arayot, and it may really be standing by itself. And Rabbi Yehuda says the fact that it's next to the consequences of Ones tells you this may even be talking about when father only had a relationship of Ones with the girl. Nonetheless, you're still not allowed to marry. Because what you're doing is violating a particular boundary that is beyond, not worse than, beyond the regular boundary of Arayot, which is essentially about assuming father's position in the power structure. Goes back likely to Noach, certainly goes to the Reuven Yaakov relationship. However, whatever Reuven did, he's trying to control that. And we find its clearest expression in all of the events that unfold in Beit David, which actually may be there to shed light on this particular issue.